The following is a Podcast One Minnesota production.
For those who simply can't get enough talk about the Vikings, we present Bonus Chatter. Bonus chatter about your favorite team that's unscripted, unfiltered, and uninterrupted. This is another edition of 1500 ESPN's Purple Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Purple Podcast. Matthew Collar here with ESPN's Courtney Cronin. Courtney, how are you?
Feeling good. Beautiful day out. The week is good. The outlook's looking good, I think. I'm happy.
On TV, constantly talking about Teddy Bridgewater.
I mean, he's definitely the topic of discussion this week.
Oh, I've noticed. Yeah, I think everyone else has noticed, too. Well, Teddy back at practice. And I think it has to be almost tradition by now since he's been practicing for 2 days. How's Teddy look, Courtney?
Oh, Teddy looks good. We saw so much of him. I saw him throw a ton of different passes. He was doing a lot out there. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, we talked about this earlier. I think I only saw him throw one pass total, which happened on Wednesday. And I know that Mike Zimmer's going to get probably pretty annoyed with these questions as they continue because their approach is the same. They're going to try to ease him into this. They're going to try to take this as slow as possible, as you can do in a 21-day window, because they do have a decision to make. But, you know, the questions are going to keep coming. I've learned in my very short time in Minnesota, there is a contingent of this fan base that hangs on every word that's said about Teddy Bridgewater. He could breathe and it would be news. Which, I mean, absolutely has happened. You know, he's alive. So, I mean, that's newsworthy right there. But, yeah, I think in what we got to see with him in the media portion, I mean, he's doing individual work still, and they're going to try to work him into some of those uncontrolled scenarios at some point in 11-on-11, which is going to be big for his knee. And, you know, he said that he feels comfortable with the way that his leg is holding up right now. He's confident enough that he wouldn't have gone back out there had he not felt that it's stable, which, you know, is a big sign for a guy that A, is a free agent next season, B, if he doesn't come off the PUP list, his contract tolls. So there's all these scenarios that, you know, he could be trying to rush this along, but he's not. So that's, I think it's a good sign.
Teddy talked with us for the first time since the beginning of training camp, and only the second time since he got hurt. Well, there's a few things that stuck out to me, but what you just said about his contract tolling, one comment by Bridgewater really echoed loud for me was when he said, mm-hmm. Oh, I could have been out there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think we all knew what he was referring to, that he was referring to being put on the physically unable to perform list, which would indeed, like you said, toll his contract over to next year, and he would make something like $2 million. Which he doesn't want to do. He wants to become a free agent and get a big payday, because even if you're a terrible quarterback, as long as you're a starter, it doesn't matter how hurt you are. It doesn't matter if you got benched in Tampa Bay like Mike Glennon, you will still get dollar bills mm-hmm. if you are a starting quarterback. Or if you're Brock Osweiler and literally never showed that you could ever be good ever and yet somehow got a bunch of money from the Houston Texans. That stood out quite a bit to me. And I guess where my mind is with that situation is I don't see how they're going to get away with tolling his contract.
Absolutely not. I mean, the fact is he says that he's been ready to go. And, I mean, that's, you know, training staff. It's kind of like the Stephon Diggs injury. He says he's ready to go. He feels good, but, you know, it's bigger than him. Well, I know we're going to get to that here. But with Teddy, I mean, they can't afford to do that, because that could get into a nasty situation between, you know, the NFLPA, you know, in terms of on Teddy's side, and then the Vikings. And, you know, it's not even to that point. It just, you know, if he plays, to clarify the situation, he plays, he's a free agent, he doesn't, there's a situation there that the Vikings are going to be looking at with his contract. So I did take that away too, as, you know, he's been ready. And I mean, obviously with the PUP list, when he was put on it, I believe September 2nd was when the roster cuts were, that's a 6-week guarantee right there that they're out of commission, and then you become eligible to come off of it with you know, going into week 7. It's an interesting situation for sure. He's in a good spot. I mean, you just worry too, not trying to get too far ahead, because I know we'll talk about this, but like, look at Andrew Luck's situation. Like, dude has to go back to being, you know, his cortisone shot because he's regressing essentially in his progress forward. That's the last thing both the Vikings and Teddy want. So that's your bottom line there. They want this guy to, in one way, shape, or form, be better and feel better and be able to perform.
And he said that he believes he will play, mm-hmm. which, I mean, what else is he going to say?
And Mike Zimmer has said that all season long.
Right. But the fact that he's back practicing and his, I think it's even a big step that he was there at the end of practice today, that he's made it through 2 days and he hasn't had to come off, just with the severity of his injury and what he had to go through, even making it through two practices is really good progress for him. He was also asked what the timeline is. And, of course, as you might expect, he was very vague when talking about the timeline. However, I think that these people, if you ask them enough questions, I mean football people, they find a way to let you know whether it's intentional or unintentional. And there was one minuscule comment where he said they've got a plan over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, as soon as he came back to practice, my first thought was, all right, there's no way he's playing against Baltimore. There's no way he's playing against Cleveland. But you have the bye week there, and then you come out of the bye week. That gives you that big window.
It's 21 days.
Right. And maybe that's what he's referring to. I don't know, but I think he kind of opened that door a little bit to, could you possibly be the starting quarterback after the bye week?
And that game is on the road in Washington, or against the Washington Redskins. So technically you're right. I mean, there is that 21-day window as far as I'm concerned, because we're at day 17, or, you know, on the countdown, where it's day, there's 17 more days. They could technically make him eligible. They don't have to wait the whole 21 days, which is why, I mean, it was kind of an obvious thing that Mike Zimmer said yesterday, but is a good point for him to make. He's probably not going to play this weekend against the Ravens. He could, if they really determined, and I don't know if that's ever happened before, where a player either comes off the PUP or the NFI and they're ready right away. I mean, at least the team wants to. We've talked about this. There was no way that he was going to come back and immediately right away be game ready, and he knows that. It's more than just, you know, the timetable and, you know, circling a game, circling a certain date. He has to see the, you know, the progress his knee makes with every day wear and tear. And by that, I mean just, you know, being out there every single day under the same circumstances and conditions that Case Keenum and Kyle Sloter are under right now. Being able to be at that workload to get himself ready to know whether he can do this consistently, which, you know, in terms of workload, I know Mike Zimmer said yesterday they're approaching it, you know, pump the brakes essentially. Like, there's no, I mean, they know, they're not going to tell us publicly, but they know what the workload is. They know how many reps they're expecting him to get each day, and if there is a progression forward. But there is no hurry, and I know I've said this before, there's no hurry to bring him back right now. Case Keenum's playing all right. But there is, you know, that's a short-term fix, yes. But if you're looking for a long-term answer in Bridgewater, you don't rush this.
The schedule really plays in their favor at this moment to keep Case Keenum in
right
and just
now.
Win with your defense, because the Ravens' offense is bad. We'll get to that later. Cleveland's offense is bad. You should be able to just go out there with this defense and defeat those two teams. And if they don't, it would be, I think, a really big upset.
Yeah.
If Joe Flacco found it, or if DeShone Kizer came back and was masterful against this defense, it would be really stunning. So you expect to go into that bye week at 6-2, despite having to play Case Keenum for a really big portion of the season, and then come out of it. And that's where I think things get interesting for when you would want to bring him back, if he's ready. Now, getting him ready is a really tricky concept, because not only can you not really have people hitting him in practice, even though Stephon Diggs said, I'm sure he wants to get hit. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, Teddy did
not
say
in the leg.
That, yeah, nobody wants to be the first one to hit him in the leg. Nobody wants to, even in a game situation, no offensive lineman wants to give up the sack that breaks your leg, a.k.a. Donald Penn on Derek Carr last year. I witnessed that firsthand, like, and how upset he was, just distraught. No defender in practice, let alone, yes, they need to get him at game speed. Yes, they need to put him in these scenarios where he's trying to avoid a pass rush. Nobody wants to hit him. Like, in that is something that Teddy said, hey, you know, when the time's right, essentially, to paraphrase, bring it on. Like, he needs to know, you know, defenders aren't going to care one way or the other when he's in a game. Like, they're not going to say, oh, you know, we feel sorry about your leg. Like, you know, they're just not going to do that. He's in a scenario now where he's got to get some practice with it. He needs to know how to move in those circumstances.
Right.
In the pocket, out of the pocket, protect himself, movement, whole thing.
And that's something that Pat Shurmur talked about quite a bit, was Teddy and his value and how much has to do with him being able to move. And he was praising Case Keenum, but you could sort of read between the lines that he's saying if Teddy Bridgewater is going to come back, then he's got to have that mobility because it's now an important part of the offense. I don't know how much it was with Sam Bradford, but when Bradford is healthy, he can move as in rolling out and throwing the ball on the move. He can't really avoid the pass rush like maybe Keenum can a little, or Bridgewater was brilliant. I mean, that's the thing is we're trying to figure out just how much of Teddy Bridgewater will be back. Mm-hmm. He says that his upper body is stronger. He's throwing the ball with a little more zip. And that's something probably people wanted to see him develop as he went along. He's got a great touch pass, but they want to see better deep balls from Bridgewater. But the mobility gave him a chance to make plays where there weren't plays. So if there was a blitz or something like that, he could avoid it. He could step out of it, and then he could throw on the move. It wasn't a running quarterback as in gaining 500 yards a year rushing, but it's a big deal, and I don't know how you can really simulate that in practice, and I also don't know how we can expect him to have that back.
And when you take a look at the Vikings practice field, doesn't it only go to 40 yards? Like, they can't really simulate accurately a drive that's going 70, 80 yards downfield and his ability to get out and scramble and extend plays. But one thing I did find that was interesting, Pat Shurmur said on Thursday, he compared the two quite a bit, which you don't usually look on paper and say, you know, look at what Teddy Bridgewater's done throughout 2 years with the Vikings. Look at Case Keenum's, you know, veteran career as a backup. You don't draw too many similarities, but that mobility is something that they have been able to not alter all that much between guys in practice during reps and in situations in games. That's, I think, kind of been the key point to this cluster of, you know, quarterback issues that they've had this year. They're not having to do all that much altering between Sam Bradford to Case Keenum. I think that Case's mobility allows you to do more. I mean, that there's no question he's a more mobile quarterback than Sam Bradford, but between Case and Teddy, that line is even smaller or even thinner. So, yeah, I think that's a good thing. But how you simulate that, I don't know. You have to just let him run. I mean, is that the way you do it? Because Case had Case has had some pretty big scrambles that, in key moments against the Bears and the Packers, Teddy obviously has had a handful of those in his career at the Vikings. They need to make sure that element, you know, is still there when he's fully back.
Yeah, there's also the part of just rolling out and throwing on the run and being able to make that throw and have confidence in your legs. Case Keenum doesn't even think about it because his legs are totally fine. So he's rolling out. Last week, for example, they get a big play where they run a play action, and I think they were in like a heavy personnel, so they've got a couple of tight ends in. And Kyle Rudolph goes to the second level. So Keenum's rolling out. He's got Rudolph 15 yards downfield, makes a good throw. That's a big part of what Pat Shurmur wants to do. I think it's become obvious since he's been the offensive coordinator that he loves play action. This team
Case loves play action. That's the thing. I mean, his whole career, that's been a staple of it. And obviously they're working to his strengths. But, hey, it's worked. You know, I agree with you. That's them tailoring it to Case Keenum.
So it's not just him being able to move Bridgewater, but being able to make that throw and have confidence in what the mechanics of that throw are, which starts kind of at the legs, I think. I have never particularly made that throw myself, but I asked Pat Shurmur about that sort of thing when I was doing a one-on-one with him, just throwing mechanics and the West Coast offense, and he was talking about just how vital footwork is. So Bridgewater is going to have to show them that before they can even consider bringing him back in. Now, my question for you on Bridgewater is, how have you perceived, having just gotten here at this beginning of the season, you moving here, how have you perceived the Teddy Bridgewater aura? Because I'll tell you for myself, I had heard some of the quotes from Mike Zimmer about Bridgewater in the past, and I really liked Teddy Bridgewater in college, in his first season. I couldn't believe that he dropped to the bottom of the draft. So when I moved here, I was excited to see him play. didn't get to see him play.
Yeah, but you were here like right as it happened. Wasn't it like the day you were moving in?
Same day. Yeah.
Jeez, man.
Yeah, I know. I know. But it's turned out that some good things, like the Lynx winning a championship, have happened since I got here, so I can't be a jinx.
That's correct.
Since Minnesota has a championship since I got here.
Okay.
And they got Case Keenum, which has obviously been a huge bonus. So,
I mean,
that was me. You're welcome. Anyway, I'm just kidding. But with Bridgewater, I was really sort of like, okay, I mean, I like this guy a lot. But the way that Zimmer talks about him is very unique for any NFL player. Like, they do share their feelings a lot, just as far as sports goes, because they don't play games very often. So it's a lot of, how do you feel about this? But for the fact that he said that he loved Teddy Bridgewater, that he never wanted to see him, his team, have another quarterback, like, these were really big statements.
Yeah.
And so I did a story on it over the off season where I interviewed some of the people from his past, and I really came away thinking, gosh, it's as good as they make it sound. Like, he is as great of a player in terms of character as I have ever been around or seen. And I think even just listening to him today, you see that attitude that he obviously has in front of the cameras or not in front of the cameras, where he was talking about what drove him through this was wanting to inspire other people with his story. And I think that's legitimate. I don't think that's just some act that he puts on.
No, I mean, I remember watching him when he was at Louisville and, like, kind of on the rise there. And then, obviously, you know, I didn't follow the Vikings much before I got here. But seeing that injury, I remember, I think, everybody in the sports world, August 30th, 2016, you know, knew about it and knew just the severity and the things that were being thrown around, that this, you know, he's lucky he has his leg, that, you know, Eric Sugarman, the, you know, head strength and conditioning guy here, head trainer, here at the Vikings, that he saved his leg, very easily could have had to have his leg amputated, and the fact that, like, some people said he was never going to play again. And Teddy spoke to that today, you know, a bit of just the severity of this injury, that he's very lucky that they handled this as well as they did, that they got the ambulance here, that they moved as swiftly to get him to a trauma one center in Hennepin County and keep him stable. Because a that's why there was so much freaking out about Gordon Hayward's injury the other day, because a dislocation is the worst thing you can have. Like, bone breaks are one thing, ACL tears, ligament tears are one thing, so nerve damage and dislocations. I mean, he's lucky. So that aside, but you're right with the persona. I mean, I hadn't been here all that long before, you know, I felt he's just such an easily approachable guy in the locker room. Number one, he's always there. And that, to me, was a big part of why he's such a well-liked guy in this locker room. Adrian Peterson talked about this when we had him on the conference call before the Saints game, the season one opener, that when he did his rehabilitation on the, you know, the MCL, $10,000, however much he spent, he chose to do it here and not go back to Houston, I believe, because, and that says something. You know, guys have they can go anywhere to do their rehab. And yes, he's been back to Miami. I know. I'm trying to remember when I saw it, but I saw a picture on Instagram of him handing out foods, like, you know, non-perishable goods to, like, people. And that was, I think, over the summer. This is who he is. Like, this is, I mean, he's a very, and it doesn't take, you know, being around him all that much. As, you know, media members, we have pretty limited access in the grand scheme of things. But this is who this guy is. And I think for Mike Zimmer to make such prolific statements like that really speaks to not only Teddy as a football player, but who, you know, who he invests his energy in. And, you know, Zimmer doesn't throw around statements like that all that often.
I have a general reporter rule of not ever really believing in any person, but trying to focus on what they are as players, because of Judd Zulgad's Darren Sharper story. Judd Zulgad and Darren Sharper got along great. Darren Sharper was very nice to Judd. This is true.
I know where this is going.
Judd said that Sharper was one of the best guys that he covered, that he was always willing to talk and that he was friendly and nice and would say things off the record to him or whatever when they were just hanging around the locker room. And, well, Darren Sharper's in jail now,
yeah,
right, for about the most heinous crimes that you can commit short of murder. So there you go. But with Teddy Bridgewater, there's maybe an exception to that rule of believing that this is the real Teddy Bridgewater. And it's not just based on what we see in the locker room or what teammates say about him, but based on his background as well and what his mother went through and kind of how he was shaped as a player to be able to handle adversity like this, which I think is a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, I talked to a sports psychologist, not for me, because I'm not that great at sports outside of my amazing jump shot.
What about your baseball career?
The baseball career was mediocre, put it that way. But I just for a story, talked to a sports psychologist, and he talked about how some of these players who go through things early in life are able to handle better when they face sports adversity. Stephon Diggs spoke to that a bit, and Teddy faced a lot when he was growing up. And I talked to Eli Rogers, who plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They kind of grew up together. And Rogers' mother was diagnosed with AIDS and was struggling with that. And Bridgewater basically made him part of his family. Mm-hmm. And then they grew together, went to Louisville together, ended up in the NFL at the same time. So you start to see this formed from Bridgewater from a very young age. And now when I asked people, do you think he'll be able to come back? People from his past, like his former quarterback coach, Eli Rogers, nobody had doubt that he would be back. So everybody seeing him here has said, I've seen this guy go through so much already that he's going to make it here. And it really is an incredible story for him to even be back, considering, like you said, what he went through nearly losing his leg.
Yeah, and I mean, to jump back on that, who didn't nearly might have teared up one or two times when they watched the video of him giving his mom the pink Escalade?
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on. Like, this is the best part about sports. We're all human, and those are the moments where you get to actually see someone's personality that's not just standing in front of a camera reciting the company line. Teddy is, I mean, he's as far as, like, you know, the exposure that the national perspective has had to him, you know, from Louisville, you know, from being a national recruit to Louisville to now, that's not changed. That's not wavered. And you mentioned the adversity that, you know, he went through, obviously, with his mother and, you know, her illness with cancer. I mean, he's been very open about that, like, and just kind of how it's been motivation for him. With the Diggs thing, I think Diggs had a good point today. And I know we're going to get to about, you know, his injury, but that stuff, you know, what you go through in life, it makes it, like, the injuries are, you know, oh, it's an injury. Oh, well, I'll get through it. I mean, and Diggs lost his father, I believe, from a pretty young age. And, you know, everything he went through to where, for him personally, it's now, okay, you know, it's another injury. I've got to get through it. I'm sure Teddy probably has some of that, too. There's no denying that this was catastrophic and devastating. No one is saying that, taking away from it. But the mindset of how severe this is, and he was able to come back from it to where, you know, he's still not fully back. Like, he's back enough, and these mini milestones that he says he reaches, you know, are good, you know, good key points for him along the journey to be able to track his progress. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there was any doubt, just, you know, given, and that's the thing, these players, this is an emotional moment for them. They were there. I'm sure, I don't know what it sounded like because I wasn't here. I know that Diggs said today that you could hear a pin drop. I don't know if you could hear the injury, as you could apparently hear Gordon Hayward's injury in Cleveland the other night. But that was emotional for them, too. They're invested in this. He's been here. His journey has been lived through his teammates, and they've been a massive part in getting him back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he talked about how much Terrence Newman has meant to him.
Yeah, he said he didn't want to single anybody out, but, like, that just shows you what a guy Terrence Newman is as far as a leader, that he's, what, 38? Teddy's 24, 25?
Going to turn 25 soon, I think.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, he has that leadership, that veteran role where, you know, he's kind of, you know, is that almost, I think, as a big brother, say, hey, where's that smile? That's exactly what he would come in there and say if Teddy wasn't having a good day. Like, that's something that I think is a really cool anecdote and a really cool part of learning just how his teammates helped him.
I really love how football is so much about sharing.
And smiling and being kind.
Smiling, caring about each other. It's really ironic because, you know, football is all about grit and grinding and all these things that they use. And even there's a famous George Carlin bit where he talks about the football language, throwing a bomb and a blitz and how, you know,
war terminology is, like, ingrained in football.
Yes, and then he said, but in baseball, when it rains, we all go inside and play tomorrow. But, you know, it really is funny how often we end up talking about the journey that these guys take for their careers of the different emotions that you have to go through, the different adversity that they have to go through, and how much the players help each other. I'm not surprised at all that Terrence Newman, their lockers are right next to each other, that he would be that type of guy. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about it over the offseason, Judd and I, quite a bit, about Newman's value to this team that goes beyond just him playing pretty well. So anyway, we'll see what happens with Teddy Bridgewater. We will keep you abreast of the situation on the Purple Podcast. You can believe in that.
We'll only be asked about it 1,000 more times between now and next Thursday. Maybe 2,000 more times.
Yeah, I know.
And we'll only see him one more. They'll be in London at that point.
Yeah.
People are going to want to know, hey, how's Teddy looking in London?
Because right, right.
He won't travel.
No,
so if he's still on the pup
so.
List, he won't travel. So
correct.
I guess it's our chance to go track him down wherever he is here. We're going to be like, hey, Teddy, what's going on?
I would guess probably Miami. Depending on the weather here, if it's as nice as it was today, then I'd stay in Minnesota. Moving on from Teddy, though, because we will mention that again. And Zimmer said, you guys going to ask me about this every day? Yeah. That's going to be a yes, Mike, since people are asking us about it every day. And it's one of the biggest stories in the NFL now. But moving on from that, this game, Ravens-Vikings, it's one of the least interesting games on the schedule, no doubt, right? The Ravens...
It's not even on TV.
Really?
No, it's like, a joke.
I mean, I mean, maybe as a national game, it would only be on locally. I could believe that.
Yeah, this game is blacked out in all but two states.
I would buy that because it really does not have a whole lot of intrigue. I mean, this is a team in the Ravens that is the definition of mediocre at 3-3. Their defense is pretty good, but it's dinged up. And their quarterback has not played well basically going on 3 years now. And it's a team that you look at from the Vikings' perspective as already having won. Like, oh, you should beat this team. This should be no question at U.S. Bank Stadium. Is there any chance that the Vikings do not beat the Baltimore Ravens?
I mean, I don't think so. I predicted them. I predicted a 10-point victory. I mean, they've won three games. Three of their wins have come at home. They play really well at U.S. Bank Stadium, and those games haven't been close. I mean, they beat 29-19 Saints, beat the Bucks by 17 points, and they beat Green Bay by 13 points. So I don't think it will be close. How it couldn't go well, I guess if Case Keenum throws, I mean, he's like third best right now in touchdown and interception ratio. I think he threw his first one last week. So if the interceptions pop up, you know, I mean, there've been some questionable, you know, calls that could have gone either way in terms of in terms of the takeaways that defense has gotten, stuff that, you know, 50-50 balls, stuff that, you know, maybe passes were tipped at the line, some of those. That's where I could see it going wrong, but I don't think it will.
The only scenario where I could see it happening is that one that you laid out, absolutely, because I thought the Packers probably had three or four more opportunities to intercept Case Keenum, but just didn't catch the ball. Like, Blake Martinez had one where it was right in his mitts and he couldn't bring it in. I mean, it would have been a really good interception, but, you know, if you hit a defender in two hands, then you did something wrong as a quarterback. And Keenum does have this tendency to believe a little too much in Case Keenum. You know, I mean, confidence.
He gets hot. He gets real hot with the, you know, the mobility and, you know, he likes to take off.
And everybody's talking about, oh, in the huddle, he's great. He's so enthusiastic. He really believes in himself.
What they call him, Wild Case.
Yes.
That's what,
well,
Diggs called him.
I covered Ryan Fitzpatrick in Buffalo, and he was like this, where sometimes it would pay off and a lot of times it wouldn't. Where you would think, oh, this guy's just going to be a game manager because he's limited physically and he'll just, like, dump it off and try not to make mistakes. Where Keenum is just like, YOLO, I don't care. I am throwing it into double coverage here, or I'm launching it down the field. There was a play.
No window is too tight.
There was a play where Adam Thielen, they actually called a pass interference on the Packers. Thielen was double covered 40, 50 yards down the field, and he just threw it up like a punt. And it was knocked down, but it was interference, and they end up with a big play because of it. But a lot of times, the cornerback turns around, intercepts the ball, and is right there. So there were plenty of things that kind of got painted over because the big storyline was Aaron Rodgers. But the reality about Case Keenum is that he's not a very good quarterback. Otherwise, he would be an NFL starter. As we laid out with Mike Glennon, someone would have paid him a gazillion dollars if they believed that he could win them any games as a starter. And there's a reason that they didn't. Because he more often plays like the game against the Lions, the game against the Packers, and sometimes that can get you beat. The Lions game, they play great defense, But Keenum made mistakes. They got a bad break on the Dalvin Cook injury.
Well, and you lose. The turnover by McKinnon.
Yes.
Can't forget the Wildcat. Yep. Look, I feel like I've been thumping the Case Keenum card a little bit too hard lately. I know that people don't want to hear it, but it's their best option right now.
Oh,
this
sure,
is
yeah.
literally, like, there's no question that they can win games with this dude, and especially the next two games, 100% winnable. Mm-hmm. Like, all things considered, I mean, you play a Ravens team that, as you said, okay on defense, horrible on offense. 31st or 32nd passing offense in the league. Joe Flacco, who had like 9 receivers last year to throw to. I don't know what's happened. The receivers, I mean, they've taken a lot of blame. And, you know, rightfully so. I mean, he's not been able to establish a passing game. But, and then you have a Browns team that they're the Browns. They're probably not going to win that game. I haven't even scouted
Weird
them yet.
Weird things happen in London, right? But yes, I agree.
Coaches get left in London. That's what I've learned. Raiders had that happen a few years ago. They fired, what's his name?
Well, I thought they just didn't remember that he had come with
them. No, they left him there. So no,
he had to fly himself back?
I don't know. I just know that he was fired in London. And then Tony Sperano, Vikings offensive line coach now, was named the interim head coach. Oh. That's where he buried the
football. That's right.
Buried the football. Total football guy move. Yes. Like, we're not going to go 0-10. You know, the whole thing. But with where were we even going with this? Like,
just the scenario.
Keenum.
Yeah, the scenario where they could lose.
Yeah, I mean, I think Case is he's performing like a top 10 quarterback. You can't ignore that right now. Nobody expects this to last, and that's fine, which is why, you know, big picture-wise, the Vikings may need Teddy Bridgewater week 10, 11, anywhere there. If they're, you know, now with the NFC North wide open, it may come down to that where, they've got to win games. They don't want this to become a 7-9 finish, start, you know, 6-2, and then really struggle down the stretch. So he can win you games. He's in the system that he's at right now, he's fine. Just I don't think many other variables can come into this to, you know, change it one way or the other.
I think he can win so long as they get big plays in the screen game.
Yes,
from Jerick McKinnon.
It's been huge. And they've been able to run more up tempo, which has not happened really until the last 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's saying something about Case being able to, you know, command an offense where they're able to catch the defense off guard. And the screen game too. I mean, that's been something they worked on all offseason. That was a huge talking point from Mike Zimmer in the preseason, and they've been able to master that so far.
I do think we have a tendency with backup quarterbacks. And I don't know why this is, but just it's a classic football thing. If a backup quarterback briefly plays well, and we know that NFL teams do this too, so it's not just us. Matt Flynn, right? That guy's still getting paid by 6 different teams who found out that he's really bad. But if with Keenum, the majority of his games have not been good. Like,
he's done enough.
Right. He's okay against the Bears, but he averaged like 6 yards an attempt. He was throwing the ball short a lot.
Well, I think you have to look at the situation, too. He came in the game with 25 seconds left. That's more, instead of looking at the overall how he performed, that's game management. That's what you want. I mean, he was literally thrown into the fire there.
But he's been bad in every other game. He was bad against Pittsburgh. He was bad against Detroit. He was bad against Green Bay.
He wasn't bad against Tampa Bay.
No, he was really good against Tampa Bay, like freakishly, weirdly good.
And, I mean, the Packers were depleted. But so were the Vikings on offense. I mean, they don't have Dalvin Cook. Mm-hmm. They didn't have Stephon Diggs. And he still, you know, was able to manage that screen game to establish it at a pretty high level early on. Talked about Chicago. Yeah, Detroit was bad. Detroit was not good.
I think the Packers game was really bad. I thought the way he played, the way I looked at it on tape going back through it, I thought he played really poorly.
He had some questionable decisions in that game. As you mentioned, with the ball that, you know, was called for pass interference with Thielen, that could have been a lot worse. I think he got a little too, not gun-shy, what's the opposite of that, where you get, like, too overconfident in your throws.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a staple of Case Keenum.
Yeah, so.
So, well, the point just being that you laid out that scenario, that if he plays the same way and this defense still has playmakers, they get a pick six or something, it's always possible that the Ravens could win. The only other scenario I see, tell me how likely you think this is that Joe Flacco finds it. And I'm not saying that that's likely because this Vikings defense is one of the best in the NFL. But I would say it's possible.
It was almost possible last week. They had came back from 11-point deficit in the fourth quarter.
And I think he's starting to get healthy and more comfortable. Not by a ton, because it still didn't look like a very good game against the Bears. But he had to sit out all of preseason, all of training camp, and then just be thrown right back in. And I think that that's impacted him quite a bit. He was very good against the Raiders, and then he was a little bit better last week. And there's always the chance that Flacco, with the big arm, he hit two big passes to Mike Wallace with Oakland. There's always a chance that if you're the Vikings, you're playing a backup quarterback, maybe you score 20 points, that they get a defensive touchdown. They're one of the best on special teams. And, you know, maybe Joe Flacco comes through. All right, before we wrap up, I mean.
I didn't even get to say what I thought about Joe Flacco.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks for talking over me there. Kidding.
Sorry. What do you think of Joe Flacco?
Well, I just thought it was interesting because ESPN put out this thing the other day in the magazine, Quarterback Confidential, and he was like the third most. Like, these are talking to players in the locker room. Some players decide to put their name on stuff. It's like, who do you want to sack the most? Who's the most, you know, who's the biggest trash talker? And he was voted as the third most overrated quarterback. He has to play up to that contract. He's got a pretty big deal. And I know that he's had moments of, you know, flashes of clutchness before. But I agree. I just think that ever since the Super Bowl year, I really haven't been all that impressed with Joe Flacco. And that was, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think he had a kind of a bounce back season in 2014, and that was it. And that was like the last time he's been any good. But yeah, I mean, the whole debate of whether he's an elite quarterback has gone out the window.
Oh, totally.
No one's even discussing
that
anymore.
He had so many playmakers last year, and he did spread the ball around, to his credit, quite a bit early in the season. It was like up to like week five, and then things kind of went downhill. Mm-hmm.
So we know that you have the Vikings winning the game, as do I, as they really should. Just last thing, Stephon Diggs and Michael Floyd dinged up. Diggs may be back because he was out there today.
Did not practice today in looking at the injury report.
Oh, okay.
So both he and Floyd, who have been out for the last 2 days, and Diggs missing the Packers game in last three practices last week, both of them did not participate today.
Okay.
Although he had a helmet on. He was going through like motions, but he was kind of sitting back. I said he was limited when we were out there.
Yeah, I thought since he had the helmet on that he would be back practicing, but I guess must
Anthony
not have...
Barr was limited. So that must be some good news that he might be coming out of the concussion protocol soon.
So if Stephon Diggs is out and Michael Floyd is out, that puts some spotlight on one Laquon Treadwell.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Man, gosh, the patience, I think, for him has paid off, and he has this opportunity right there in front of him. He has to, like, not overthink it. Mike Zimmer brought up a brilliant point this afternoon. He's like, sometimes, you know what it's like to be a little, like, called... Has anybody ever called you extra? Like, Matt, you're being too extra today. Do you know what that is?
No.
Just means you're doing too much. Like, just ease back a little bit. Chill out. And that's what I took from Mike Zimmer, saying, hey, Laquon, don't be too extra. Like, stop being so extra out there. Because he said he might come out here and run routes for an hour after the game or after practice today. Or he might, you know, he's always saying, I have to do this. I have to get better. And obviously all those things are true, but I think some of that pressure he puts on himself is too much, to where it's counterproductive for a guy like that who came off a big injury that he had his junior or his sophomore season in college, obviously left early to, you know, be a first round pick. There are all these things that he has to live up to, probably in his mind. And I think he did a good job last week of preparing himself for what's next, that Diggs is, his snaps are not going to be available all that often, but when they are, and when Michael Floyd is not in the game, he has to step up, because he could have his chance now. I mean, it's going to be the Adam Thielen game. That's what you're going to lean on, and obviously you're going to want to get more out of Kyle Rudolph, as he has been getting, Case Keenum, that is. But Laquon has a golden opportunity here. The run block, that the 15-yard penalty, I think it was a positive sign. I know that it's an interesting call there, and you know, you can't go in and try to take someone's head off. But, you know, for me, that's been a staple of why he's so valuable to this offense. And we saw three catches for 51 yards last week. That's pretty good.
I'll put that under believe it when I see it with, yes, Laquon Treadwell, because he's going to have to be open. He's going to have the right route depths. He's going to get everything right pre-snap, post-snap, all those things that he struggled with in order to actually be a weapon. But the door is open.
The opportunity's there, without question. I mean, this is – you couldn't paint this any better unless you took Thielen out of the game too, and then all of a sudden Jerry is right, your number one, and Laquan's your number two. Because, you know, you see with Stacy Coley and – potentially, I guess. I mean, Mike Zimmer left the door open for Rodney Adams, you know, those guys having more of an impact on special teams, where that leads Treadwell to, hey, you know, majority of these passes could come your way.
Mm-hmm. Ravens jersey, worst in the NFL? Close?
My brother had an Ed Reed jersey growing up. I don't know why, but it was pretty sick. Like, the Maryland State flag is a problem. I will say that. I don't understand the shield. I don't understand like why it's like 15 different colors, but I think it is a pretty cool jersey. I like the color purple too. So,
okay,
I mean,
then we're on different ends here, because I think it's bottom of the barrel.
But it hasn't changed. You know, they've kept that thing the same for a long Super Bowl years, you know, all of the, you know, Ray Lewis years. I mean, those black outline numbers are pretty sick. You can see him good on TV.
Oof, I don't know about that. I maybe the Jaguars and maybe the Tampa Bay Bucks. Pretty much everything from Florida is pretty bad.
Oh, gosh. But, have you seen their, what is it, Color Rush uniforms that are like,
oh man,
tangerine?
Yeah.
Tangerine beige throw-up color.
And they look like an indoor football league team on a week-to-week basis with those jerseys. Like, you'll never win with those. No way. But the Ravens, the dark on dark, black on purple, I don't know. I think I need some contrast there. I also thought it was, especially when they came into the league with the shield with wings, that was especially stupid. So they, at least they fixed that up a little bit. I put them in the bottom.
You have to play in the snow in Baltimore. So, I mean, you got to like.
You don't play in the snow in Baltimore.
Don't you? I mean.
No.
Why? Some
snow in Baltimore?
Oh, come on.
Not much.
The last time they played, it snowed.
When?
In 2013. That was the crazy 5-touchdown game in 2 minutes. It snows there. You have to be able to see yourself in the snow.
Does not snow that often.
Baltimore is like basically New England.
No,
kind
it's
of.
Not. What the hell map are you looking at? Stick to football.
Yeah, that's. No, it snows there. It gets cold there. I've been there.
Stay
I've been
away
to the
from
airport.
Geography.
It gets cold there.
Yes, you're a Baltimore expert.
Do you know about crab cakes?
No, I have never had crab cakes in Baltimore.
That makes
no,
me a bigger expert than you.
But I know a lot about snow.
I did too. I'm from Chicago. It snows down there.
You're more of a wind person.
Wind.
All right, that's it. No more weather and geography talk. Bye.